Welcome to the resurrection of DMOU, Destination Marketing Organization University, and I'm your host, Bill Geist. At the dawn of the millennium, DMOU was one of the most innovative distance learning platforms in the destination marketing organization space. During that time, we interviewed over 150 of the best and brightest in our field, as well as those from complementary disciplines, sharing innovative ideas to drive our industry forward. Alas, business got in the way, and it just became impossible to maintain a three-a-month, subscription-based, 60-minute format distributed, how quaint, on CD and cassette. For its day, it was pretty cool. So anyway, we set DMOU aside and we focused on our clients, but we never lost affection for DMOU. And we would always smile fondly when our DMO friends would remind us that they had been subscribers of the original service. Well, DMOU is back, and it's back with a new twist on a cool idea. This time around, no more subscriptions, no one-off CD sales. DMOU is free. No more CDs. DMOU is now a podcast. And no more 60-minute programs. We'll talk with our guests for as long as it takes for them to inspire you. The new format is three questions and a bonus round. Some of these podcasts may go 15 minutes, some could go 45. We just don't know, and that's going to be the fun part of bringing DMOU back. We're charting new territory, and that's what makes DMO pros tick. So strap in, engage thrusters, and enjoy the ride. DMOU is back and sponsored today by our friends at the Veneto Collaboratory. Joe Veneto has worked with destinations across North America to design experiences that go beyond the ordinary. And as experiences are the currency of the 21st century consumer, DMOs and their partners must engineer unforgettable customer experiences. And you can discover how at the Experience Lab. Joe has that planned for here in Madison, Wisconsin, where we're located, October 15, 16, and 17. It's an intensive three-day collaborative workshop for destination marketing executives, travel suppliers, and tourism organizations to learn the process of creating unforgettable travel experiences. The lab includes presentations on the experiential development process, along with a series of mobile workshops. For more information, go to VenitoCollaboratory.com. And now on to our show. Our guest today is Linda John. Since 1993, she has served as the executive director of Visit Eau Claire and more recently as the Eau Claire Area Sports Commission executive director. She's been a member of the Wisconsin Governor's Council on Tourism and is currently serving on the foundation board of Destinations International. Some of Linda's top accomplishments at Visit Eau Claire include the development of a successful regional tourism program, creation of one of Wisconsin's first sports commissions, the launch of a successful mobile visitor center called the Fun Patrol, and an Eau Claire mobile marketing center via an Airstream trailer known as, I love this, the Eau Claire Stream. She has also most recently worked to develop a state-of-the-art experience center at Eau Claire's new Pablo Center at the Confluence, while undertaking many other destination development initiatives related to the sports, music, arts, culture, and convention markets of Eau Claire, Wisconsin. She holds a Bachelor of Science degree in Business Administration from Minnesota State University in Mankato and a Master's of Science degree in Training and Human Resource Development from the University of Wisconsin at Stout. Linda John, welcome to DMOU.
Thank you, Bill. It's a great pleasure. And I was one of those early subscribers to the former program.
Oh, I know. We had such fun. And it was the subscription model that killed it because we just couldn't keep up. I mean, you know, like I said, business got in the way and our clients came first and DMOU sadly came second. So now with this new format, we're pretty sure that we won't be, you know, locked into delivering 3 60-minute programs a month. This is going to be catch-as-catch-can, and we'll do as many as we can. And if people don't hear from us for a month or two, it's because we're busy, and we'll get back to it as soon as we can. It's fun to watch the way that we all got into this business and all started, and how we have been evolving the whole art and science of destination marketing. And pretty much everywhere I go, people today are questioning the viability of visitor centers. They say it's old school. They say it's unnecessary because we all have these mobile devices in our hands. And indeed, you actually were a DMO that left a physical visitor information center in favor of going to a mobile center.
Yeah.
And now you're back. So here's my first question of the three. What made you to decide to embark on the development of a new visitor center, a physical visitor center? And why did you decide to call it an experience center instead of a visitor center?
Yeah, well, absolutely correct. In fact, this is Visit Eau Claire's fourth physical location since I started as the director back in 93. We actually started in a office in a bowling alley And we had a card table of pamphlets and a rotary phone with an 800 number. And that's how we did destination marketing. So I'm definitely aging myself here. But we early on decided to be a partner in a walk-in visitor center at a highway location back in the early 90s. And we were there for 15 years. But we did see the trend of fewer people getting their information by stopping and coming in and going shifting to digital avenues of seeking their information, both prior to the visit and in market. And so we made the conscious decision to move away from a walk-in visitor center. And that was in 2009. We really thought that was going to be it. We really thought we would not be in the walk-in visitor center business again. But sometimes these community projects have a way of luring one back in. And then really what happened was there was a community-wide effort to develop a new art center at the confluence of our two rivers in Eau Claire in our downtown area. And we were approached and invited to establish a walk-in visitor center as part of that project. And we were pretty flattered to be invited to be part of such a big undertaking, a $60 million art center. And then we realized that actually our involvement was part of the pro forma. They actually needed our money to make the project work. But that's okay. We were still invited. So that's the point where we really decided it was important for us to be part of a marketing presence for the community in the downtown as part of this project, but that if we were going to do it, we were not by any means going to do it as a traditional visitor center, because we had done that for 15 years and we saw what had happened. So that's when we said, if we're going to do this, we really have to make this cutting edge, state of the art. What are people, whether they're visitors or locals, what are people wanting in a space such as this if we are to develop one? And that is really kind of where our research began.
So that gets us to our second question. What was the overall vision for the Experience Center and how did you plan for the development?
What we did was we started talking to community members, the business community, visitors. We went on the road and toured visitor centers across the country to find out what people were doing to engage visitors and locals alike. And what it came back to was that we really wanted a space that was not just for visitors, but that was for the locals, for their friends and family that are visiting, for job candidates, for employers, for college students going to the universities and tech schools here, and for potential employers to use as a first-stop shop to impress job candidates and really to showcase the community through this space. And that is why we decided it was going to be for more than just visitors. It was going to be a way to share the Eau Claire story through the various senses and bring the local vibe of our community to life through 2,500 square feet of usable space.
So I love the fact that it is not just for visitors, because I think that that is, well, we're seeing that in virtually everything that destination marketing organizations are doing today, is there has to be a resident component and a very visible resident component for what it is we do. But, you know, philosophically, you, as you said, people are getting their information in other ways, but tell me about a visitor center as a way to expand a trip. I almost look at the return of the concept of visitor centers as, you know, they're here for a reason. And if we can lure them into the visitor center, we can share with them other reasons to stay, do more, spend more. How much of that was part of the philosophy behind doing the experience center that you're doing?
It was a big part of it. And I think if any other community were to follow a similar approach, it's basically, it would be nothing like the Eau Claire Experience Center, because what you're doing is you're reflecting your community's own DNA. And so in our case, we want to bring forth the independent spirit, the hip neighborhoods, the artful collaboration, the sort of fun cast of characters, and the playful feel of our community. And we do that through pop-up partners, where we rotate every month a wall where we have a different artist or shop or food producer that basically is featured. We also do that through our entertainment corner. And Bill, you know, I did do some pre-video walkthroughs, so all of this can be seen on an attachment to this too. But in our entertainment corner, we're bringing local artists and entertainment to life for the visitors and people that are coming to the Experience Center. We're showcasing our local music, our local art, our local creators, sharing their artful skills with the community. We have a kitchen area that is for local food sampling and food producers. And we have life-size maps of our area neighborhoods. So this really has been an approach of, this is Eau Claire. It's a microcosm of what you'll find out in the greater community. But it really is intended to inspire people, locals or visitors, to want to do more in our community. It could even be a bunch of people from an office coming down at 4 o'clock for our, you know, sampling happy hour of local wines and cheeses, and then saying, you know what, this, instead of going home tonight, let's go make a night of it and go out to the Pablo Center for a show. So it's extending that activity within the community, both from locals and from visitors, by showcasing the things that people will find out in the greater community within our own space.
And I love the fact that you've made space for performance, because music is such a big part. And you use the term DNA. I mean, the DNA of Eau Claire is music. That's part of the brand. And bringing it alive on a regular basis is just one more way to drive traffic into the Experience Center.
Right, exactly. And it's been kind of fun. Because we're part of 140,000 square foot art center, and our little space is 2,500 square feet at the loading dock area of the center, by the way, we have embraced that and really made this as a way for, it's almost, we see it as like an incubation center for talent. So maybe you're not on the big stage at Pablo Center, but if you have a talent that you want to share and you're willing to come in and we can make it open to the public or whatever, people don't have to pay to entertain in our space. They can come in and they can make music or make art, and we're going to welcome them and they're going to get an audience at the same time. So it's, we've already had some people that have been discovered, so to speak. It's very flexible space. It really lends itself to another thing Eau Claire is very much known for, and it's independent creativity. So it's like, you come up with the ideas and we're going to let you have the space to make that happen. One of my favorite activities that has happened is one of our famous hometown heroes is Justin Vernon, 2-time Grammy Award winner of Bon Iver, and his personal trainer, Jeff Rogers, came to us and basically said he wanted to do pop-up workouts in our space throughout the winter. And so we have some great gym leading exercise classes, you know, and it's just, it's like his thing. And it's, so it's been a really great way for us to leave the creativity to the community of how the space will be used.
That is very cool. So for the people who are listening in and thinking, well, maybe I should rethink this whole visitor information center concept and maybe evolve into something completely different, what would you consider to be the greatest lessons learned and the best practices recommended for any destination or DMO considering an interactive visitor space?
Well, I do think you have to give some thought to, you know, what you're trying to achieve. Why would you be doing it? Is there a problem that you're trying to solve? Is there a need, or is there an opportunity that's going to help to leverage the space to showcase, you know, and in the end, we still are in charge of bringing visitors to town or engaging them when they're in town. And so it's like, really have to give some thought to that. And I do believe that one of the best practices is talking to the business community and economic development and workforce development and the locals and find out what they're interested in seeing. I also think it was really helpful for us to do the tours of various centers around the country. It was bits and pieces of a lot of different centers, not all community visitor centers, some were museum visitor centers that we visited, but one of my favorite components, we have in-floor shadow boxes in our space, and we'd seen that in Seattle at the Museum of Pop Culture. And it's a great way to program your space in an interesting way. Right now we have it all set up for bicycling and promoting one of our bicycle slash coffee shops. But that can rotate into different themes constantly. So I think, you know, finding best practices out there, what others are doing. We definitely wanted to go away from the large, you know, visitor desk and brochures. And we got a lot of ideas on how to do that in an engaging way. So that's some of the best practices, I think, is just really talking and doing your research and homework ahead of time. What are you trying to solve? And what are some of the ideas that are out there? Most of the challenges that we've encountered, it's really not so much about the development of an experience center or a visitor center. It really had more to do of being part of a larger collaboration, a community-wide development, that most of our challenges came through from a standpoint of communication. One example was, like I mentioned, our space is 2,500 square feet, and we're going into a 140,000 square foot facility. So we're just a teeny tiny polka dot on the footprint. Therefore, we didn't insert ourselves in the design meetings and the design discussions along the way. We thought, well, they'll let us know when it's time for us to design our space. But instead, what was happening is there were people making a lot of assumptions about what a visitor center would be. And in the end, we ran into a lot of like, no, we don't want it set up this way or that way. This is our plan. And there was just a lot of backtracking and communication and extra expense, honestly, to get it done the way we wanted, because people were assuming they knew what a visitor center was. And they were envisioning more of a traditional feel.
And I love the fact that you have gone away from the, you know, visitor desk. Right. I mean, more of an Apple Store feel, or even the new builds in the new brands of hotels across the world are really de-emphasizing that front desk into more accessible space. And I love that. And it also gives you flexibility. So that's really cool.
A lot of flexibility, and it breaks down the barriers. So it's high tech and it's also high touch. And our experience experts are the staff that greet the visitors and the folks coming in, and they're trained to, you know, be really tuned in. We have one board member that's very much an introvert. He goes, I don't want to talk to anyone. I just want to go look on my iPad and figure things out. So we're really responding to people's needs. Do you want help? We're here to help you. But otherwise, you can just hang out, and we have iPads throughout the space, and you can just literally, you know, pour a cup of free sample coffee and hang out on the iPads. You can hang out and just do work for a couple hours if you want. I mean, we've really made it that kind of a space that people would like to come to and collaborate. We have a lot of groups that have community meetings here. And we had a really fun one. Our county knew about the space and wanted to have a department head meeting here last week. So there were like 20 department heads from the county in our space. And it was really interesting, you know, to kind of watch how serious and formal they are. And we had this like really sort of relaxing, fun atmosphere. But at the end of it, one of the department heads came up to us and said that she wanted us to know if we could help her bring her state county clerk's convention to Eau Claire, because she just loved what we were doing in the space and was really proud to put a bid in for their convention. So there's a lot of spinoff effects from this as well.
That is fabulous. Well, congratulations. And I can't wait to get up to see it. I've not seen it yet, just the videos. And so we are really looking forward to that next trip to Eau Claire. So time for the bonus round. Something that I know about you that many others don't is that you actually began your career in hospitality as a cast member at Disney World. So my question is, has the statute of limitations expired? Tell me what it's like after hours in Mickey's World.
I love that. I started out on the Magic Kingdom College program. I'm sure there's others listening in that had that experience. And I lived in Snow White Village. So seriously, it is all very Disney-ized. I ended up staying for 5 years. I went everything from sewing names on Mickey Mouse hats in the hat shop on Main Street Magic Kingdom to being Betsy Ross in the American Pavilion in Epcot Center World Showcase, to really the key bridge to my career now, which was in the Walt Disney World Resorts for 3 years. But I would say that the after-hours culture was probably what kept people there as long as it was. This was really, really hard work and, you know, long hours of having to be sort of that on stage feel. And we definitely were, the Disney employees were catered to by a lot of the businesses, especially, you know, we would literally have our dinner at the happy hours. You know, it'd be 2-for-1 drinks and free food for like 3 hours. So we found our way around to those. And I would say that I do have lifelong friends from those days all over the world. It was a wonderful microcosm of culture. It was a melting pot. Being in wardrobe, getting ready for your shift was like a trip to the United Nations. You're hearing about 4 or 5 different languages being spoken at any given time. So it was really cool. And when I saw your bonus round question, I was like, I have to share my favorite memory from behind the scenes at Disney, because you're never allowed to be sort of out of character, whether you're, you know, a frontline employer or an actual costume character. But I'll just never forget this one day I was on break, down in the break room, and I had to laugh because there was the three little pigs and Goofy. Of course, they were, their head part of their costume was off, but the rest of it was on. And they were playing doubles ping pong in the break room. And it was just pretty hilarious to see them all costumed with the exception of the heads going at it, pretty competitive. So that was just a fun memory.
And the parties, not as legendary as one would imagine because you were all so tired? Or the statute of limitations is still on for Disney?
Statute of limitations might still be.
All right. Well, Linda, again, congratulations on the Experience Center. We will definitely have a link to the walkthrough video so people can see what you've done. And hopefully, if you're anywhere in the upper Midwest, make sure that you take a trip to Eau Claire to experience it firsthand. So thank you so much for all you do for the industry through Destinations International, all you do for the Eau Claire area. And thanks for taking time out to join us on DMOU.
Thanks, Bill. It's been a blast.
All right. That's it for this edition of the Resurrected DMOU. Tell your friends and peers we are back and looking forward to sharing, as we said on the original website all those years ago, innovative ways to tell people where to go. Again, thanks to our sponsor, our friends at Veneto Collaboratory. This year's Experience Lab is right here in Madison, Wisconsin, October 15, 16, and 17. For more, click on VenetoCollaboratory.com. DMOPros.com is where you're going to find links to the Z News, our knowledge bank, videos, blogs, and more, including our video testing service for DMOs called DMO Vision. That's DMO Pros with a Z. Executive producer of DMOU is Terry White, and this is a production of DMO Pros. I'm your host, Bill Geist. Until next time.